I said this morning that tonight I'm looking forward to looking at the story of Jesus cleansing the temple. That story is told in all four Gospels, although it's not told in the same place in the books, and we'll look at that in a few minutes tonight. This is kind of one of those amazing stories to us, and people think about this story and talk about this story, and it's interesting the reaction you get from people who have read this story and what they say about it, what they think about it. I've heard some pretty strange doctrine coming out of this story. I think probably the strangest doctrine that comes out of this story that some people had, and I've been told this, I've been quoted this, I mean, people have wrestled with this, and that is to justify their anger. That kind of is the strangest angle that I've gotten from people about this story and how they feel. Well, Jesus got angry. Look what he did. He started beating people with a whip. So I guess I can get angry too and do whatever I want to. I'm exaggerating, of course, a little bit. But some people justify their anger because of this story. They think it's okay to hold on to their anger. Interesting. Well, tonight I want to look at this story, and it follows in three of the Gospels. The story that we had this morning, the story of the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, I've said before and talked about, and you've probably heard the term Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The first three of the Gospels are what are called the synoptic Gospels, or they view things together. And then aside from the three synoptic Gospels is the Gospel of John. And it's interesting that in this story, it really follows the pattern of three synoptic Gospels, because the story that's told in Matthew, Mark, and Luke are very similar about this event. But John's story is a little bit unique and a little bit of different. In fact, John's telling of the story is really quite a contrast to the one that Luke tells in a couple of ways. And so tonight I want us to look at that, and I think probably the main thing that comes to mind is where we find the story of the cleansing of the temple in the Gospel of John. Well, in each of the Gospels, Jesus next goes into the temple area and cleans it out, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. After he comes down into Jerusalem, the triumphal entry, according to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the next thing they record is this story of Jesus cleansing the temple. So tonight we're going to read from Mark and from John. But if you have your Bibles, turn with me to Mark chapter 11, and we're going to read his account of the cleansing of the temple. Mark chapter 11, and we'll begin reading at verse 12. Mark 11, verse 12. The next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, Is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it into a den of robbers? The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him, for they feared him, because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. When the evening came, they went out of the city. I said a couple minutes ago that Matthew, Mark, and Luke kind of tell a similar story. They're not exactly the same, but they're similar. In this case, Luke's telling of the story is the shortest. Usually Mark's is the shortest when it's a story that's found in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. I mean, in general, Mark's gospel is the shortest of the gospel, and his narratives are the shortest of almost every story, but not of this one. Mark's is a little bit longer than Matthew's, and quite a bit longer than we find in the gospel of Luke. But what they tell us, Matthew, Mark, and Luke are very similar. There are only a couple of differences in the details that we find in Matthew, Mark, and Luke about this story. One of the details is there's a difference in what these men record that Jesus says in this story. In fact, they seem to each be recording a part of the conversation, a part of the story, because they don't contradict each other, but they're things different that Jesus said, which would tell us that each of them maybe are drawing upon a record. It could be their own memory, but more likely either their memory or someone that conveyed to them or told them the story and wrote down things that they had been told or that they remembered from the story. And so there were different things that Matthew, Mark, and Luke recorded. They're not very significantly different, and they're not different a lot, but just a little bit. Matthew and Luke seem to write the story and narrative as if this takes place right as Jesus gets off the colt when he comes into Jerusalem. I said this morning that Jesus came down in Jerusalem riding the colt, the significance of the colt. Well, Matthew and Luke kind of tell the story that, well, right as Jesus got down there and all the disciples were praising him, the next thing that happens is Jesus goes into the temple area and he cleanses the temple. But Mark gives us a little bit more of the timing and the story. Mark actually tells us a little bit of a different story about that. He says, yes, it happened next, but it happened the next day. Mark clearly writes that it is the next day, and Mark also adds the record of Jesus and the withered fig tree. You look back in verse 12, it says, the next day as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. Mark adds this part of the story. And so if this week you do what I challenged you or recommended that you do this morning and take each of the Gospels over the next 4 days and read them, you'll see that Mark focuses on this story of the withered fig tree, whereas it's not reported this full story in the same way. Well, Mark does. He talks about the judgment that Jesus makes about this withered fig tree. In fact, it's kind of a curious story in itself, and it's not my topic tonight, but just studying what the four Gospels say about the withered fig tree is very interesting. Mark seems to connect that story to the story of Jesus going into the temple. In fact, if you kind of read that narrative and just read it through, it kind of gives you an idea that Jesus was thinking about that fig tree when he went to Jerusalem. He went into the temple area. He interacted with the people that were there. Well, in this case, Mark does give us a little bit more information about this story. The cleansing of the temple takes place, according to the Gospel of Mark, on Monday. That would have been the day after the triumphal entry. We know that it was on Sunday that Jesus went into, came down over the Mount of Olives and came down into Jerusalem. And the next day, he says in verse 12, is the day that this story takes place. I said a few minutes ago that John's account is a little bit different than the other three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. I want to go ahead and read that next, and then we're going to come back to Mark in a little bit. So turn over to John chapter 2, verse 12, and we're going to read John's account of this story. John chapter 2, verse 12. John chapter 2 says, after this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples, and there they stayed for a few days. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found men selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple area, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. How dare you turn my father's house into a market?" His disciples remembered that it is written, "Zeal for your house will consume you." Then the Jews demanded of him, "What miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." The Jews replied, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple and you're going to raise it in 3 days?" But the temple we had spoken of was his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said. Then they believed the scriptures and the words that Jesus had spoken. Now, while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many people saw the miraculous signs he was doing and believed in his name. But Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all men. He did not need man's testimony about man, for he knew what was in a man. There are many things about John's telling of the story that is unique. he just kind of tells the story different than Matthew, Mark, and Luke do. The first thing that I notice about John's telling of the story is where it's recorded in the Gospel of John. We're reading from the second chapter of the Gospel of John here. Each of the other books, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are all reading their story is taking place as the last 7 days of Jesus' life take place, literally following Jesus coming into Jerusalem. It's kind of unique that Matthew, Mark, and Luke specifically, chronologically put it in that place, but John doesn't. And so a lot of people have wondered, what does that mean? Why is it that John tells his story, which is unique in a number of ways? Why does he record it as being at the beginning of Jesus' ministry? I mean, John puts it in his gospel after Jesus' first miracle in Cana of Galilee. I mean, why would John put it there that early? Did it happen that early? Did John put it there for a specific reason other than when it happened? Or were there two times that Jesus went into the temple and cleansed the temple? That's certainly a possibility, and we'll look at that for a possibility tonight. It is possible that Jesus cleansed the temple twice. If he did, then one would have taken place right when he began his ministry, and the other would have taken place almost at the very end of his ministry, as if to show us that there was something about the Passover and Jesus coming into the temple area that was very important. But there's another possibility, and probably more people think the second is more likely than the first, but not everybody does, and that is that when John put together his gospel, he didn't write a chronological account that Matthew, Mark, and Luke did. John was arranging his book, he was arranging his stories, he was arranging the memories that he had and what he had been told in a way different than is a chronological story of what had happened. For example, you could ask me about my brother Mark lives in Illinois. Tell me about my brother Mark. Well, I could tell you, well, he's a pastor. His wife's name is Katya. He grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and he's 53 years old right now. I've told you four facts about Mark. They're all true, but they're not in chronological order, because I didn't tell you in chronological order. And some people think that when John's writing his gospel, he's not trying to write a chronological account. He is writing more a doctrinal account. He's trying to spell out for the people that would receive the book of John, which would have been the Greek people, it would have been the people in Asia Minor, the people that we think of from the end of the New Testament time period on the island of Patmos and all the churches that Paul had spread the gospel to, that the purpose of the gospel of John was to the Greek world. It was to the Gentile world. It was not to the Jewish world. And so when he wrote it, he wasn't writing to detail all the Jewish facts. Excuse me. All the Jewish facts about Jesus, but he was writing more theologically to persuade the Gentiles that Jesus was the Son of God. And, yeah, why don't you, if you would, thank you. That Jesus was the Son of God and he was the Messiah. The Messiahship of Jesus wasn't that big of an issue for John. It isn't in the whole book. I can't remember if he ever uses the word Messiah. I have to look at that. I'm not sure. But you compare that to Matthew and Mark and Luke. They're using the term Messiah all the time. They're trying to convey, or at least Matthew and Mark are, they're really trying to convey that Jesus is the Messiah, whereas John is trying to convey more that Jesus is the Son of God and the way of salvation for every person, for every Gentile. So some people think that the reason that John puts this story in the beginning is more theological. For example, the Gospel of John begins not with a Christmas story, not with how Mary and Joseph are the fulfillment of God's plan, but John starts, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. He was with God in the beginning." John is telling the story of Jesus differently, and the whole Gospel is like that. When you look at the chronology of the first few chapters of the Gospel of John, he talks about John the Baptist. Then he talks about calling his disciples and changing the water into wine. And then he tells this story. And then he goes and he talks more about John the Baptist. And so you can't necessarily see that everything in the Gospel of John is a chronological look. If there were two cleansings, and that still, it certainly is a possibility, one of them would have had to be at the beginning and one at the end of Jesus' ministry. But it's also probably more likely that the reason that John's is different is the purpose that John had in writing that. John's entire gospel is less arranged as a timeline as it is a persuasive story. Well, if you look at John chapter 2, just back from this story, for example, if you have your Bible open, look at verse 11. It says, "This is the first miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana of Galilee." So verse 11, Jesus is in Cana of Galilee. In verse 12, he goes to Capernaum. And in verse 13, he's in Jerusalem. Now, that sounds like he must have been walking pretty fast. You know, if he's following this real fast chronological detail of everything he did, it's more like John is covering themes. He's covering significant things in Jesus' life. And we'll see that with quite a few stories that he writes and he talks about as you look at the narrative. It wasn't as important to John to record when it happened than it was to explain the meaning of this story and why Jesus did what he did. Well, let's look now a little bit in detail at John's, I call it John's unique account of the story. Number one, John ties this story directly to the Passover. He ties this story directly to the Passover. As you look at what he writes in verse 13, it's evident that John wants everybody to understand the connection of Jesus being in Jerusalem to the meaning of the Passover. It says in verse 13, "When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem." He gives the timing. He gives the context of that. This is how he introduces it. Here John doesn't say anything about the triumphal entry. He will record that later, the triumphal entry, but here he's simply talking about the meaning of something that Jesus does. Number two, John also records that there were cattle and sheep being sold along with the doves. You might think, well, that's not a big difference, and it's not a really big difference between Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke all talk about the doves that are being sold in the temple. But John specifically mentions cattle and sheep that are being sold also in the temple. This would have been expected at the time of Passover, because when any Jewish man or Jewish family came to Jerusalem, they were to bring with them one of two things, either a dove, a cattle or a lamb, if they could afford them. And if they could not afford them, then they were to bring a dove. And so every family, depending on how wealthy they were to bring one or the other. Many of the people were able to bring a lamb, for example, for the Passover, and bring them for sacrifice, or a bull, an animal. But if you could not afford that, you were to bring the dove. And that was from the Old Testament law. So John records that that's what they were selling in the temple place, and that would have been what you would expect to see. That was how they did it at that time, and would do it really until the destruction of the temple. And not only was it for people who could bring their animals, but when you think of all the people that came to Jerusalem, most of the people that were in Jerusalem for the Passover did not live in Jerusalem. They came from all the towns and villages all around Israel for the Passover. Many of them did not travel and bring their animals with them, and so they had to buy them when they got to Jerusalem. And so where did they buy them? For hundreds of years, where they bought them was in the court of the temple. And there were booths set up, and animals were bought and sold. And they were sold to Jewish people who were coming to fulfill their obligation of the Passover. And so this is a picture that would have been kind of like this year after year after year for a long time. That wasn't unusual. The fact that they were selling animals was not unusual at the temple place. Well, Jesus, according to John, it says, reacted when he saw all this going on. But John doesn't tell us a lot about what he was reacting to, other than he just simply says, when Jesus saw it, he made a whip. It says, then, let me go back here. It says in verse 15, so He made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple area, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. So we know from John that Jesus' reaction, we don't have any of his words up to that point. We don't really know a lot about what he saw or felt. At that point, it just says that he makes a whip. That's a pretty strong statement for Jesus to make. I mean, all of a sudden, for him to make a whip and start slapping it around, driving people out. I mean, this is the only story really in the New Testament of anything like this kind of reaction that Jesus had. John really doesn't give us a lot of the detail of why it is that Jesus did that. Just simply that something was very offensive to Jesus. John records the offense Jesus names is that they have turned his father's house into a marketplace. He says, "Get these out of here. How dare you turn my father's house into a marketplace?" So that's what John records about Jesus. John doesn't record Jesus' words about prayer. And I think that's significant because Matthew, Mark, and Luke do. And then they say something else about that. He says, "Get these out of here," Jesus said. "How dare you turn my father's house into a marketplace?" As if it wasn't okay for the animals to be in the temple area. There's a couple things about that. And one is that Jesus uses a word here, "my father's house." You probably know that the temple area in Jerusalem was made of an outer court that was very large. And in a little while, I'm going to show you a picture of that. And then you have the temple. And then inside the temple area was another court. And then there is a smaller area divided off by walls. And then you have the Holy of Holies. You have actually four areas that are called the temple court. The word that Jesus uses here in this verse, I've been told, the Greek word that Jesus uses here is of the second inner court, not of the area outside where normally the sheep and the animals would have been. And so many people believe what Jesus saw there was the selling of animals inside the temple, which would have been a real violation of the law. Outside of that court area would not have been, and that's where the animals had been sold year after year after year, really all in the history of the temple. But Jesus may well have been reacting to those animals being brought inside that court area. The inside court area was the more sacred place and the place that Matthew and Mark and Luke talk about being a place of prayer. And so when you kind of look at what Jesus said as recorded in the book of John, then compare that what the Luke says, a couple of those differences comes out. And the other thing about that John is John's whole purpose in recording this story doesn't seem to be the same focus as Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John seems to be focused on the words of Jesus about something else. I said here, simply, John says, "How dare you turn my father's house into a marketplace?" He doesn't say anything about prayer. But what John does record is something else that Jesus said at the same time and on the same occasion. Verse 18 says, "Then the Jews demanded of him, 'What miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?' And Jesus answered them, 'Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days.'" What John seems to record from what happened is what Jesus is saying to them about his death and his resurrection. Again, what is John writing for? What's his purpose? And he records in this story this interaction between Jesus and the religious leaders about rebuilding the temple. It says in the next verse, "The Jews replied, 'It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days.'" Now the temple, which is actually the third temple, there's Solomon's temple, and then the rebuilt second temple that took place kind of right at the end of the Old Testament time, Ezra and Nehemiah during that time. And then when Herod came along in 20 BC, Herod basically dismantled the temple as it was in 20 BC, and he rebuilt it. And so the third temple is called Herod's temple. He didn't completely destroy the second temple, but he changed it and made it larger and rebuilt the area around the temple. And so Herod's expansion of the temple is what's called the third temple. That started in 20 BC. And so when you look at this verse, the Jews replied, it's taken 46 years to build this temple. So you go from when Jesus was at this point and you subtract 40 years, you get to about 20 BC, which fits exactly what history tells us, the beginning of the rebuilding of Herod's temple. It's kind of a confirmation of the dates that you find in the gospel and the narrative about the temple and about Jesus' ministry, somewhere between 26-27 AD and 30 AD. And then you notice here, and I'm going to point out one other thing, destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days. I said earlier that the Greek word that Jesus used about my Father's house was the second innermost court of the temple. But the word that Jesus uses in verse 19, destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days, is not that word. He uses the word for the Holy of Holies, the Greek word for the Holy of Holies. So he was saying to them, destroy the Holy of Holies and I will rebuild it in 3 days. Imagine their reaction to that. He first used a word about the outer court, not the far court, but that second court. And here he says, but destroy the Holy of Holies and I will rebuild it in 3 days. Of course, they didn't understand what he was saying at all. They thought he was talking about the building. Of course, that's what they thought. But then you go to verse 22. It says, after he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said. Then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. So John adds that to this narrative. And he said, well, at the time when Jesus said this, people thought, oh, yeah, right, you're going to rebuild this building in 3 days. And they had no idea, but John adds that. He says, but later on, after Jesus died and he rose from the dead, that's when the disciples began to understand and put it all together. What was Jesus saying in this story? What was he saying about the rebuilding of the temple? What was he saying about him being the Holy of Holies, of him being that one that takes the place of that sacrifice of the Passover lamb, as that priest would go in once a year to make atonement for the people? Jesus, they understood later what the atonement meant. They understood later the significance and the importance and the meaning of Jesus saying, tear this down and in 3 days I will rebuild in 3 days the resurrection of Jesus himself. And so when you understand the word that Jesus uses there, they didn't understand at the time, but they would understand it later. And that to me just adds to the richness of the meaning of the atonement, that Jesus, he went into the Holy of Holies. The temple curtain was rent in two. It was ripped apart. And Jesus is proclaiming, tear this down and I will build it again. And that really seems to be what John cares about in the story. At least that's what he focuses, and that's what the narrative is about. Not so much about Jesus going in and cleansing the temple, but what did Jesus say about the temple and the Holy of Holies at that time? So again, there's a possibility there are two different stories here, and it could be the first, but probably most people believe that John was just, his purpose and why he telling the story was not to fit it into a perfect chronology of all these things, but for us to understand, for the Gentiles to understand the meaning of Jesus' death on the cross. Why did Jesus die? Why was he raised in 3 days? What did it mean? Is a rebuilding of something very special? Well, whether it was a separate event or John was writing what he thought was most important, it is kind of a unique and separate account of Jesus' words and actions. Well, let's go back to Mark now for a couple of minutes tonight. And I want to kind of just mention what it is that Mark and Luke and Matthew focus on. I've kind of tried to explain, well, what did John focus on? He focused on the rebuilding of the temple and what that meant as far as who Jesus is. But I noticed that something that Matthew, Mark also, and Luke focus on is the authority of Jesus. Now, John did too, because they came and they challenged him, and by what authority do you do this? But I see that Mark records a different response that Jesus made to the question of authority. Now, could it be that they're two separate events? It's possible still, but it's also possible that Jesus said a whole number of things during that time and during that week. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke write down what they heard and different things that they heard. Jesus' authority was challenged many times throughout his ministry, and all the gospel writers record they were always trying to trap Jesus. Toward the end of his ministry, they were trying to find things that Jesus said by which they could accuse him of breaking the law or accuse him of being unloving or come somehow trap him. Like when they brought the woman in John chapter 8 in adultery and threw him down at Jesus' feet. And I could just see the guys over there saying, "Hey, we got him now. Man, we'll ask him, what do we do with this woman? Should we stone her?" I mean, they knew the Jewish law. They knew that the rabbi would know the law, and the rabbi always keeps the law. And they just knew that they had Jesus, because they're going to ask him and he's going to say one of two things, they thought. He's going to say, "Well, the law says stone her, so let's stone her." And then people will not love him and people will not be drawn to him anymore. They won't think his authority, they won't see him any different than any other Jewish people, and they won't listen to him. Or he might do the other thing. He just might tell the woman, "Well, hey, it doesn't matter what you did." And then they had him there because he's broken the law and they can stone him. They thought they had him, but of course Jesus, in his amazing wisdom, what's he say? "Those of you that are without sin, pick up the first stone." And they don't know what to do. They start to drop their rocks and they begin to go away. And that's the way it was all along as they tried to trap Jesus. Well, once again here in the story around the temple, they're trying to trap Jesus. What does Jesus say to them? Mark tells us that Jesus talks about the baptism of John. That's later on in the chapter. "By what authority are you doing these things?" they ask. "And who gave you authority to do this?" Jesus replied, "I will ask you one question. Answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I am doing these things. John's baptism, was it from heaven or from men?" So they discussed it among themselves and said, "If we say from heaven he will save, then why didn't you believe him? But if we say from men," they feared the people, for everyone held that John really was a prophet. So Jesus asked them a question, and then there they are, taken aback again. Well, he got us again. You see, John records the interplay of this authority question in one conversation, and Mark records a different one, and we find that in Matthew and Luke also. All of them kind of have a different record of how John responds, or how Jesus responds to the traps that were being set for them. They were trying to trap Jesus, and many times and in many different ways, and John records this trap, and Mark records a little bit of a different one. Well, Mark also is a bit more specific about what Jesus reacts to. I said earlier that John really doesn't give us a lot of information about why Jesus reacted. We kind of read between the lines, maybe rightly or wrongly. We know that he said that about it being a place of commerce or a marketplace. But look at verse 15 and 16 of Mark, and we find a little bit more of a deeper detail of what it is that Jesus was reacting to. Verse 15 says, "On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the table of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple." Again, he used the same word recorded in Mark, not the full outside court and not the Holy of Holies, but kind of the inner court of the temple, but not the innermost court of the temple. I hope I've said that well. To carry merchandise through the temple courts. "And as he taught them, he asked, 'Is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers?'" So Mark gives us more information about this. For one thing, he says, what Jesus would not allow to happen. Then he tells us a little bit more about what Jesus said. He said, "Not through this court area are you going to do this. You're not going to conduct this commerce through this inner court area." And so that's number one. And number two, he says, "But you have made it a den of thieves." I think in the first part, Jesus was saying that the temple, the sacred place of which the Passover is about to take place, the meaning of the Passover, it seems to me like Jesus was saying that you have made this such a thing about making money and and getting money, that it's lost totally the significance of what this place means. In part, that's why Jesus had to become the Passover lamb, because the Jews had lost the understanding of what it was that God wanted to connect to them and how God wanted to forgive them and atone for their sins. Jesus had to take over the system of the Passover and become the Passover lamb. And he was saying that this is a special place. It's a place of prayer. It's a place to seek God's Spirit. And yet you have turned it into something else. And Jesus says in Mark, you've made it a den of thieves. He doesn't say you've made it a marketplace, which John kind of says, but you made it a den of thieves. Mark also records these words. In one translation, it says you made it a den of robbers. And then our other translation, it's a den of thieves. The issue that Mark is recording here is the injustice that was going on in the temple area that was offensive to Jesus. You could call it a number of things, but we probably call it highway robbery. In other words, the people that had the animals and owned the animals, and they were, of course, a part of the temple system and the high priest and all the people that ran the temple, they brought in these animals and then they charged exorbitant prices for them, for these people that traveled outside of Jerusalem. They came in, they didn't have their own resources, they didn't have enough money, but they needed a dove, for example, a dove for the Passover. So they would come and say, well, we need to buy a dove for our Passover sacrifice. And so the people would say, you know, normally it costs $2, but we're going to charge you $30 for that dove. And they had to buy it because that's the only place that they could get it. And this is the kind of injustice that Jesus was talking about when he said a den of robbers or a den of thieves. They were extorting money, when one translation says. They were demanding far more money than was right for the people to pay for these animals that they would use in as part of their sacrifice. As Jesus talked to the tax collector, John the Baptist said, even going back further than that, when John the Baptist, the tax collectors came for baptism, what did he tell them? Don't take more money than is due to you. And this is kind of the same situation that is here. Again, you remember back to John the Baptist, he called those religious leaders the brood of vipers. Again, they were corrupt. They were unjust. They were charging people far more. They were extorting people, money from people. This injustice was going on here. And it's really at the heart of Jesus' anger. It seems to me this is what Mark is identifying as the reason that Jesus reacted as he did. It was in the wrong place, and it was a self-centered financial scam of the common people. And it was perpetuated by the religious leaders. It was the leaders themselves. It was the priesthood. It was the high priest. There were those temple officials who were robbing from the people in the same way that Eli's sons were robbing from the people when they overseeing the sacrifices that were taking place in the tabernacle in the Old Testament. In the same way, Jesus came along and he says, "What you're doing is wrong," so he spoke out against them. And they got very angry. Now let me read verses 17 and 18, and then kind of based on what I said, listen to the narrative as I've kind of given you some background, but listen to this narrative at this point. "But you have made it a den of robbers. The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him, for they feared him, because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching." If you put those two things together, "but you have made it a den of thieves," the chief priest and the teacher of the law heard this and began to look for a way to kill him. They were really offended by what Jesus did there. Of course they were. Jesus was totally saying, "You can't do this. This is wrong." He was calling them what they were. And boy, did they get angry. And you know, it's interesting about Jesus getting angry here. Well, let me go to that in a minute. Okay, we're going to look at one other scripture tonight, and I think it's going to tie together kind of this idea of the den of robbers. Go to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 7. We're going to go to a prophecy in Jeremiah, chapter 7. We said before how many different ways that Jesus fulfills the prophecies of the Old Testament. Now go to Jeremiah, chapter 7. And we're going to read from the Old Testament about the people in the temple and how they're robbing from others. And this is the quote that Jesus takes when he says this, recorded in Mark. Chapter 7 of Jeremiah, I'm going to read verses 1 through 11. Listen to what the people were doing. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Stand at the gate of the Lord's house and there proclaim this message. Hear the word of the Lord, all you people of Judah who come through these gates to worship the Lord. So who's he talking to? The people that come into the temple. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Reform your ways and your actions, and I will let you live in this place. Do not trust in deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. If you really change your ways and your actions and deal with each other justly, if you do not oppress the alien, the fatherless, or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, and if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then I will let you live in this place, in the land I give your forefathers. But look, you are trusting in deceptive words that are worthless. Will you steal and murder and commit adultery and perjury and burn incense to Baal and follow other gods you have not known? And then come and stand before me in this house which bears my name and say, we are safe, safe to do all these detestable things. Then look at verse 11 particularly. Has this house which bears my name become a den of robbers to you? But I have been watching, declares the Lord. See, back in the Old Testament, they had the same problem. It had become a den of robbers. It had become corrupt and unjust. And although we don't know all the details of what they were doing there, we certainly have in Jeremiah chapter 7 the prophet saying to them almost some of the same words that Jesus says here. This is supposed to be a sacred place, but you're stealing from people. You're lying and stealing, and blood is being shed, and all those things. Has this house which bears my name become a den of robbers to you? But I have been watching, declares the Lord, the den of robbers. That wasn't an expression that Jesus kind of said for the first time. He was quoting back to this story from Jeremiah and saying, this is the way it was then, and now you're doing it also. And it made Jesus angry. He gets angry at this point. He's confronting the injustice and the corruptness of the temple system. And that's what seems to bring out the whip in Jesus. Boy, what a fearful thing to think of. Jesus with a whip. That's not a picture that we often have of Jesus, you know. What made him angry? You know, I note that it wasn't when he was rejected by men, as far as we know. He was hurt. But we don't have any indication that that made him angry. When the soldiers beat Jesus, we have no indication that he became angry. When they spit on him and they took that crown of thorns and they put it on his head, there's no indication we have that he was angry. When he was on the cross and they came by and they were scorning him and laughing at him and making fun of him and heaping insults, one translation says, he didn't become angry. In fact, then, you know what he said? Father, forgive them. They do not know what they do. But when did Jesus become angry? When he saw religious people being unjust. When he saw religious people without a heart of mercy. When he saw religious people whose hearts were hard and selfish, merciless, taking advantage of people. That's when Jesus became angry. There was a coming confrontation that would take Jesus to the cross. And this is one more story about that coming confrontation. What is Jesus angry about? He's angry because of the hardness of the hearts of men. And he reacts to it and he takes a whip and he begins to drive them from the temple place. As you read this week, if you do read the Gospels and read these stories, you're going to see that growing confrontation. This is just one of them. But the whip was about the confrontation between God and evil, between heaven and hell, between Satan and God's plan. Once again, as I said earlier, and all the confrontations in the last 7 days of Jesus' life, and this picture and this story, I think, is a part of that too. What made Jesus angry? It was the injustices around him. One more picture tonight, and that's of a artist view or drawing of what they thought this third temple looked like. And I want to put that up just for a minute tonight and just talk about that for a minute. But this is kind of the Temple Mount as it was believed existed in Jesus' day. That's a big area. I don't remember how many acres it is. Debbie and I had an opportunity to stand on that mount area. And in the middle is not Herod's temple. It's the Dome of the Rock, the Muslim mosque, as you know that. And as you're looking at that, to your left, on the left side, is a second mosque. And that was actually been there longer. It's older. But on the Temple Mount today is not the Jewish temple. It's two Muslim mosques. The one in the middle, the Dome of the Rock, is the newer one. It's got that big golden dome that you've seen in pictures and that kind of thing. And over to the left is the second one. And there are amazing tensions about this area. Where you see there is the artist drawing of what the temple is. And I want to put that up for a couple reasons. You can see a little bit in that picture the different courts that were thought to exist in Herod's temple. The outside area, that's where all the commerce took place. That's where people ran and played. In fact, you can't tell it by that picture, but when you came up out of the Kidron Valley and you came up this gate that's down here, there used to be a gate over to the left as you look at the picture, and that's how people went into Jerusalem, through the Temple Mount, back in Jesus' day. And so people who were coming from Bethany and from Jericho would go right up across that area, and then it's not the same then completely as it is today, so you can't compare it, but people traveled across that all the time, and there were animals, and that's not the area that Jesus seemed to have said that you've made this a place of market. Jesus, I believe, was talking about inside the first court area inside that temple, if I understand the words that I've read about, but that's just a little bit about that and looking at that. Well, anyway, I hope you have a good journey this week in looking in these Gospels. If you weren't here this morning, you might not know what I'm talking about, but I just invited our church family to take the four Gospels the next 4 days, either start today or tomorrow, and on Monday read Matthew from Matthew chapter 21 and the last 7 days of Jesus' life, and then Mark chapter 11 on Tuesday, the last days of Jesus' life, and then do the same thing with Luke chapter 19. And the last days, and then the same with the Gospel of John as well. But just take a day between now and Good Friday and focus on each of these Gospels and see what God would speak to you about. And I bet if you read and you study and you meditate, God can show you some things that would be interesting for you. Thank you for being here tonight and for being a part of our study, and hope you have a good week. God bless.